Welcome to Scenes, conversations in culture with the people who know it best. We chat with guests across music, art, fashion, film, sport and technology in a bid to understand the scenes we love that little bit better. I'm your host Lenny, and in this episode I am joined by Will Abel from none other than Ostrich Records, who shares his take on the jazz scene, touching on record collecting, inclusivity and open-mindedness within the community, breaking down the inaccessible stigma surrounding it, jam sessions, the impact it has had on other genres, and how important jazz is as a medium to communicate personal voice. I hope you enjoy listening as much as I did. Ostrich Records are purveyors of jazz, such an important and culturally relevant genre within the UK. What started as an online vinyl store, named after a local pub down the road in Derby, was the result of over two decades of obsessive vinyl collection and an unconditional love of music. Created by longtime university friends Wyn and Al, the digital store has blossomed into a beautiful community of musical appreciation. Branching off from just sales, Ostrich Records also promotes gigs around London, showcasing some of the best rising talent that jazz has to offer. From Zoza Cole, the Sultan Stevenson Trio, through to the critically revered Jelly Cleaver, Aussie Rex has demonstrated both a widespread knowledge and appreciation of the genre. With grand plans to partner with Somerset House this winter, and already in the throes of planning their second birthday party, I'm absolutely buzzing to welcome one half of the Ostrich Records powerhouse, Will Abel. Thank you so much for coming in. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. What words? Wow. you guys are too kind. I'm good. Thanks for having us.
We rolled out the red carpet.
Yeah, clearly. Wow. Thank you.
I can't take full credit for that. So I'd also like to take a second to introduce an old pal of Will's, a colleague and a friend of mine, and the brand new producer of this very podcast, the one and only Ruby Carter. Unfortunately, Ruby doesn't have a microphone today, but I can tell you that she waved and she's got a big grin on her face. And in the next episode, we're going to try and make sure she's mic'd up. So to kick things off, as we always do, can you tell us the first thing you fell in love with and the impact it has had on you later in life?
Wow, that's a good question. I'll tell you what, it relates to music, so it's a good one. And it's more of a vivid memory to kickstart things off. And perhaps music is one of my main loves, obviously. So perhaps the memory of where that first probably began. I remember, do you remember you used to be able to get those three CDs for a tenner at HMV when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah.
I remember going with my mum. I'd done like an exam at school or something. It was like a treat. And we'd gone to HMV that day. And I remember getting quite a random three trio, but still very memorable in my mind. And I got The Beatles' Greatest Hits or something like that, Tommy by The Who, which my mum specifically picked out for me, and I think it was Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction quite randomly. But I remember that as being a very fun day, and from then onwards, that's when I got into collecting music and stuff. So I'd say that's a memory that I love, and because of what's become of it.
Well, there goes my second question.
Nice.
How did you get into record collecting?
There you go. Preempting.
Answered it
again,
straight.
Well, again, I credit my mum with it. She gave me a load of her old ones to start me off, and then onwards it went, and it just sort of became pretty obsessive, buying people's collections as like a kid and stuff, and just going to shops and randomly finding stuff was mainly the big part of it. And just going into it like that, random stuff, picking up bits.
So was it that process of searching and discovery that excited you as much as the end result of listening to the record?
Yeah, I mean, it still does. There's nothing like going for a nice record shopping spree or something like that. I mean, it's as good as it was as it is now. And as I said, I like going in, and I always like save a tenner to just get random stuff, like, you know, from the pound bins or £2 bins or something like that. Just get like a couple of random records. Those are the most fun. That's the bit that you love. Also, like finding gold bits that you've been after for a while is great, but the random stuff is where I think I built a lot of music taste from, so that's always still a big part of it, I guess.
Talking of music taste, so what initially drew you into the jazz scene?
I'll credit this to my friend Will Markham. You should check him out. He's an excellent jazz pianist, still does gigs around London, and he was studying at the Birmingham Conservatoire, up in Birmingham, obviously. And I used to go and stay with him quite a lot. I've known him for 20 odd years or something like that now. So when he started there as a pianist, I started visiting and stuff and got to know a load of his friends there that were also on the course. And just hanging out there in a social setting, which I will probably come back to later because I think that's important. Just sitting down in a social setting and having people show you random different bits. And obviously those guys were studying at the time, playing it to like a crazy level and, you know, listening to it all the time. So that triple threat sort of really got me into it. And obviously going to a lot of their gigs in Birmingham. They have a jam night there, which again, we'll probably get onto later. But yeah, that's through them, through Will Markham. So thanks to him.
Respect, Will.
Yeah.
So that actually leads me on to my next question. You absolutely named this. It's like you've seen them before. You've kind of touched on it then, and I just wanted to understand what jazz culture means to you.
I don't know. Again, it's kind of hard for me to comment in that sense because I'm a white guy that doesn't play any jazz really. But from a perspective of what it does mean to me, I guess, in that sense, or what I admire about and what I like, it's a great medium for not only communicating personal voice, the voice of an artist, which I think as a genre it goes pretty unrivaled, and I think people can really speak through their instruments in it, which I think is great, and that's something I very much value in music. I want to hear somebody say something, be it vocally or through an instrument. Two, I think it's just a community based thing in a big way. There's always been sort of youth programs for jazz and kids growing up and sort of stuff like that. It's a very tradition-based, progression-based genre. So looking back whilst also looking forward and respecting what's come before whilst going ahead. And that's that whole teacher-student, but not really teacher-student boundary that I think is sort of ingrained in it, which I very much admire. And I think just in general, from what I've experienced, being at gigs and jams and chatting to people that play and whatnot, everyone's just really nice and really collaborative and just really up for playing with everyone. And that, again, for a music front or a music scene is very alluring to me. I like that a lot. I think it's how it should be. So, yeah, I guess that triple threat.
And why do you think jazz has held such longevity in the UK music scene?
Yeah, I mean, again, at the root of it, I think it is that ability to voice oneself. Really what's the word? Ironically, I can't remember the word to speak clearly. articulately, eloquently, bingo. Yeah, it's an art form where one can speak very eloquently through their instrument about themselves, about how they're feeling, about what's happened in their lives or something they've seen. There's countless, you know, tunes in jazz that are of that ilk that really people can speak through. Sorry, what was the original question again?
Why jazz has held such longevity?
Oh yes, yes.
Specifically,
I think as a medium to voice one's own opinions, that it's crucial in that, and it's an eloquent means to do so. And again, it goes off of that tradition thing. I think it was a medium through which, obviously, I can't really comment on it that much, but from reading, the black community had it as their sort of thing and their style of music, and that's how they sort of not only made a living, but, you know, created such beautiful art forms within their own communities and stuff. And it became a real community hub for them. And again, the community hub is what gives it its longevity now to this day. So yeah, again, community, artistic voice. And as I said, it's a friendly scene. And I think that appeals to a lot of people and is very inclusive in that sense. Obviously, it's a hard scene to get into because it's quite technically challenging, or doesn't need to be, I guess. But yeah, I think it's very welcoming. So I think that's always good.
On the subject of community, you've obviously started to build this record label and now also a promotion arm. What have you learned from the jazz scene when it's come to building your own community?
Good question. It's an open-minded community. I think it's always up for development and welcoming people in that have a different musical style or have a different angle. It doesn't have to be so restrictive. It's not a restrictive genre. It's very open, and in that sense, not judging either. You have many facets, you know, many facets of the style of the play, of the setups of the bands. Even you could have, you know, Zoza Cole's just coming out with a new album, I'm going to plug it, of just him and eight different percussionists, solo sax and solo percussion. And I've heard a bit of it, and it sounds incredible. It's so variable and so open to personal interpretation, but in a group setting, I think that draws a lot of people into a community. From doing the events, I guess what we learned, especially we did one, our first one up in Glasgow. Yeah, our first one up in Glasgow. And that's got a great jazz scene. There's loads of really great people up there. And what we found is that this is a ticket sales thing, which is kind of interesting. Up until the night, ticket sales are pretty steady. But then suddenly the sort of band and the Glasgow, that jazz scene community got a hold of it, because we'd never done anything in Glasgow before, so it was a fresh base and we're sort of going off like off blank. Suddenly got word of it and tickets flew like there was no tomorrow, you know, just because they were so interconnected and so open to talking to each other socially as well as artistically, that it was just a flourishing thing all of a sudden. And the night was amazing. It was a really great crowd. I think, no offense to anyone that's been to any of our other events, but maybe it's the best crowd.
Oh, come on, the one event I couldn't make it.
Sorry, guys. No, I'm joking. You're all great.
It's really interesting because it's a genre. I'll start again. Really interesting because it's a genre that I think on the outset feels potentially quite daunting for people to access. And everything you've said so far is the complete antithesis to that idea. And the fact that the community is so welcoming and open-minded seems really attractive to someone like me who doesn't have much of an understanding of jazz at all. Is that one of the reasons as well why you got into it in the first place, aside from Will Markham?
Yeah, I mean, like, again, hanging out with those guys, listening to them talk about it, I've not got a clue what's going on. They're really on, you know, the technical side of it, and that is in itself is extremely impressive. But you don't need it. No, you don't need it. You can just, I always say this, anyone can listen to music if you can, you know, feel a beat or hear something and have an opinion, great. And that's all you need of anything of that ilk. And I think jazz is quite open to that. I think you can go into it with an idea, because I think it's a very idea, or at least it is from my interpretation, of an idea-based art form. You know, like I said, you have personal ideas, you have theories that you can put into practice for the technicality side of it. So yeah, I think many people can just go into it with an idea, and I think of late that has become even more important and welcomed by like the sheer number of jam nights that are popping up left, right and centre over London, or seem to have done in the past 2 or 3 years. And those spaces are exactly for that. It's for people turning up. I mean, I've been to jams and you see people turning up with all sorts of instruments I've like never seen before, ever heard, and it's great. And they just get up and they have, you know, a big band, you know, keys, multiple keys players, guitars, bass, drums, and just these wacky instruments, people popping up. And I saw a dude laying it down on a MacBook that he turned into an accordion the other day. Wild. Can't remember his name, but you'll find him on Instagram if you want to, if you try.
MacBook accordion guy.
Yeah, you'll find him. But yeah, that's what I mean. You can just turn up with an idea or a style that's your own, and people are receptive of it and go for it. And if they're not, who cares? You know, it's that's all part of it. You know, if people don't like it, you did it, and they're not going to judge you for it. You have an opinion on it, and some people do love it, but it's just a space where you can get up and do it. You can just have a crack at it, and I think that's great. I think that's very appealing, and was something that very much appealed to me as a listener, as a promoter, as a mediocre player. Yeah. It's all,
I'm
it's
sure
all
you're
good.
Being overly modest.
No, I'm amazed. No. But no, yeah, it's on all fronts. That style is very appealing to me, and yeah, on all fronts. I think it's great. I think it's great to see within a music genre and a music scene.
And the sheer number of jam sessions that you just mentioned, do you think they've had a big impact on contemporary jazz distinguishing itself as its a genre in its own right?
I guess through its collaboration with all sorts of bits and bobs, perhaps. Yes, it's hard to pin it into a specific style, to be fair. And in a way, jazz has always kind of been doing that. You have like people pushing the free stuff like Ornette Coleman and stuff back in like the 60s and stuff, and even before that the hard bop stuff going from bebop but not a history lesson time. Like sounds silly, but like, yeah, just they've always been doing it since its inception. It's been like it's a quite a pioneering, pushing, challenging genre in that sense. And you know, you get Coltrane doing spiritual stuff, and then you get the 70s jazz funk, and then 80s and so on and so forth. And now we are where we are, and you've got people like Kamasi Washington doing all sorts of bits and doing albums with Kendrick. Damn, that was silly. Kanye's on my mind today, but that's another side of the news.
Kanye's always on the mind.
Yeah, especially at the moment, but whatever. But yeah, you know, like, yeah, Kamasi Washington doing stuff with Kendrick Lamar and how Kendrick Lamar's incorporating jazz into his albums or jazz themes into his albums and such. It's a whole new style, and it's touching every genre at the moment, I think, in a big way. And I think the Jam Nights are real crucibles for that. They're really pushing all the different communities across London and all the different styles and across the world. But I know the London one and Birmingham, they have the same, and Glasgow as well. And why not? But yeah, they're all pushing together this group ideology of really experimental stuff, putting genres together, not really worrying about, as I said, whacking labels onto it and just making a new sound where it brings into different styles from all sorts of musical traditions.
I think the majority of people wouldn't even have a clue that the Kendrick album has taken inspiration from jazz.
Mm.
And because it's not labelled as that, do you think that is a benefit in a way rather than potentially putting off new listeners?
Again, another good question. And again, hard for me to comment, because I would say if that did, then maybe check your attitude. But perhaps not. That's not the good answer. I get that to some people it can come across as quite inaccessible. I think that is a common stigma against jazz music, as it were, anything of that kind. And it can be quite hard to get into it in a way. It's a great question. I really don't know if it generally would. Maybe, but I do think we're at a level. It's a good question. I don't really know how to answer it. Like, yes, but also no, because I think people are more aware at the moment of sort of a wider variety of music. And I think, as we'll maybe go on to later with the record shop side of things, younger listeners, or at least a lot of our customers, are sort of 18 to 30, roughly, I'd say, is a general percentage of them. And our gig goers as well, as much the same, if not more, like 90% younger people. I think people are becoming more aware of music for its own sake, as opposed to the genre labels putting people off. I don't think that's as much of a thing as it is today as it was, say, 20 years ago. And, you know, people being as scared of metal music for Satan worship and stuff like that. I don't think people do that as much anymore, generally speaking. So I think, although yes, maybe it puts off some people still, because there is a bit of a stigma that hangs on to it, I think younger audiences, and not just younger audiences, audiences in general, are getting rid of that ideology, idea set of, you know, restrictive bounds of genre, and are just going for stuff that sounds good.
So I think with a large number of other genres or scenes, there's a very vivid picture of what it is, whether that's hip-hop or grunge or, as you mentioned, metal. After this conversation, I'm now seeing jazz in this big Venn diagram sitting in the middle with everyone else covering it slightly. Does that ring true? Because I can't picture what a room of jazz enthusiasts would look like, but I could picture what a room of emos, and I was one of them, so I feel comfortable saying it, looks like.
I think that's a pretty true thought, because stylistically, as I said, jazz touches pretty much every genre, or at least it does not every genre, but in a sense, going back to the metal again, there's loads of technical metal bands that draw heavily on jazz and have done since like the 70s. The band that we got for that first gig in Glasgow that I mentioned, a band called Aku, which is Harry Weir, who's a guy from who I met through Will at Birmingham, actually. He's a crazy good sax player. His style is nuts. Check him out on Instagram, Harry Weir, W-E-I-R. And he's in a trio with Graham Costello and Liam Shortle, and they're also in Corto Alto and another number of other Glasgow-based stuff. But their side project, Aku, is a sort of what they dub doom jazz outfit, which incorporates metal and elements of hip-hop. They like MF Doom is a huge influence for them, just nominally, but also stylistically and sound-wise. But yeah, and I think, and you get them all in a room, I think it would be quite the creative crowd of enthusiasts. I really think you have people from every genre can get into it and do get into it for the what I've said previously. Stylistically, it's incredible. Artistically, it's very respectful, and community-wise, it's very welcoming. So I think you would, that Venn diagram does hold true. You'd have quite the array of people at such a gig, which we did at the Glasgow one. It was quite the array of people. Quite a crowd.
I was then going to go on to ask if you can put your finger on why jazz always endures, but I feel like that's all we've been talking about from the beginning.
Yeah, I guess,
everything is a reason why it continues to evolve, continues to be important, and continues to be loved.
To summarize, perhaps easily, it's a pretty raw genre. It's a pretty raw art form to express oneself through, so I don't think it can get diluted down in areas, but at its core, you can do anything with it, and as such, it's there for as long as it will be, you know, because you can just draw from it and speak through it in its loose sense, whatever it may be. But yeah, I think it's a raw art form that can be used and appreciated.
You mentioned earlier that your customer base and your ticket buying base for the events is fairly young. Can you put your finger on why there's been a resurgence in that generation getting into record collecting?
I mean, we thought about it a lot before. We thought about it a lot before starting the shop, for example. Is this a good idea? Will people actually buy records? And I mean, there's stats behind it and stuff. Sales are up like 200% every year consistently. It took over. It became the most popular physical medium for music since like cassettes came back, and that was, I think, 2 years ago that became so, and it has been again. So the statistics are there, it is back. But why? It's a good question. I think, as I said earlier, I think younger people, and again, this is generalizing to say younger people, it's not just younger people, obviously, I'm not being ageist, no. but I think people are becoming more, in an age where you can have everything. You know, everything, I have a Tidal and Spotify, you can have every song you want at the touch of a button. So why buy a record? Because I think people appreciate the collecting aspect of it. I think people appreciate having the product, like having the thing. I think it's important if you love something so much, to have it there. You own it. It's something that it's yours. You've picked it. You've collected it. You've chosen it. You've curated it. And I think a curated record collection is a thing of beauty. But yeah, and then just down to the listening experience, it's great to listen to vinyl. It's nice. It's an activity. We often, at uni and still to this day, we'll have people round and there'll be all the records there and the shelves, like, go pick a side or something. And you'll just go round and someone will pick a side of a record and you'll listen to it quietly or in the background, and it'll just be a nice activity. It's something to do rather than just whacking on shuffle and being done with it. Someone really puts thought into it. It's that whole putting thought into it from start, from the artist making the album, putting the artwork and the liner notes and this, that and the other, to the listener who's picked it for their collection to curate it, to enjoy it in its entirety, start to finish, you know, as it is. I think it's that sort of uniqueness and respect for getting away from that everything at your fingertips and really having something unique that you've chosen that's been put together specifically for this. It's that, and that's what it's there for, just that. I like that.
I fucking love that. I'm stealing that. I think we've all thought a similar thing, but I don't think I've heard anyone put it so eloquently.
Again, we ran through it 100 times before starting the shop, so I should know it by now.
Yeah, and that just really speaks to me, that whole idea of respect and almost seeing it as this funnel where all this effort's coming in, and then by the fucking time it gets into someone's earpods, it's almost half of that's wasted.
Yeah, and financially for the artist a lot of the time as well. But that's a whole different kettle of fish.
We're not going to get into that now. So we've obviously touched on why you started the record shop, and then your first event was in Glasgow.
Yeah, that's right.
So where do you see the future of Ostrich Records, and what does, you know, specifically maybe 2023 hold?
Yeah, that's a good question. It is an interesting question as well, because we might start shaking things up a bit, to be honest with you. We're going to press harder on... Now we're down... Because we, me and Al, who does it with me...
is in the room as well, by the way.
She's keeping me in line. We only recently moved down to London. I moved 10 months ago now, and Al moved about 7 or 8 months ago, give or take. And being in the city has sort of jigged up what we want from Ostrich, what we enjoy about Ostrich. We can see the bits that we're really into. And at the moment, that's more community-based stuff, more events-based stuff. That's what we're looking at. Scaling up the events, bigger events, more often, different styles of events, that sort of stuff. Taking the records out, putting on little record fairs, little pop-up bits and bobs, stuff like that. Because now we're in such a hub of people, and within this community, it's great to start exploring it in that sense and get off the online record shop and into doing more physical stuff. And we have a journal series we do. We have a playlist series we do where we get artists. We've had all the ones that have... That's actually how we get to know a lot of the artists, is through asking them to do playlists on Instagram, like in the summer. Would you like to do a playlist? And then, would you like to do a gig? That's a great community side of it. And I've gone off my train of thought. What was I on about? Oh, what's next? Yes, more events, more community-based stuff, more journals, more playlists, all that sort of good stuff. Different events, bigger events, more often. More fun.
Amazing. So yeah. Get involved, everyone.
Yeah, that's it. Stay tuned for a lot more coming soon, I hope.
So this conversation's got me buzzing about just learning more about what you do and the scene generally. Is there any advice you'd give to someone like myself who is completely uneducated, but, you know, has a passion or a drive to want to learn more? What would you advise the best way into it is?
Go to some jam nights. Easy. Definitely.
Done.
That. Definitely that. There's so many great ones in London. Leia, who was one of the first people to do a playlist for us and one of the first people to do a journal thing for us, and she also played our first birthday gig. She is incredible. She's great. Leia Mondo and the Sunflowers. Go check them out on Instagram. She helps run an incredibly good jam night called Peng Femme Jam. Again, check it out. It's an inclusive space for female identifying folk that can just get up and play and that sort of stuff, but that's a great one. Ori Community is a big one. That's at the Colour Factory in Hackney Wick. That's a big jam, and they get a lot of cool players down there, a lot of big names. And that's just a great night. They all are. That's what I'm saying about the jam night. Not only do you get to see that sort of music being played at a really high level, and as it should be, in a collaborative space, it's really engaging and a great way to get into it. They're also just really fun. They're a great time. It's really good energy. It's really good spirit. It's a really good way to see not only the music, but the community at full force. And they're usually pretty cheap, and you never know what you're going to get, which is great. I think that's so much fun.
I'm there. Count me in.
Yeah.
So to wrap things up, as we usually do, can you recommend something for us to read, listen to, or watch that has helped you gain an insight into a culture unfamiliar to your own?
Ooh, what a question. Can I pick two albums, or is that
you
too
can
much?
Pick
it's a record,
as many as you
Let
want.
Me just check the name of one quickly. I love it that much. I'm 99% sure on it, and I really don't want to mess it up because of that.
Googling interlude.
Okay, I'm back. Two albums then, if you want to. Going off the conversation we've had, because jazz went from not being a very big thing that I listened to or had any relation to being a very big thing that I listened to and had a relation to, so I'm going to do two jazz albums for that sake. I'm going to do a classic, A Love Supreme, the Coltrane album, which everyone should listen to. It's a masterpiece. And then the other one, Power to the People by Joe Henderson. That's a great album, a great insight to two different but similar styles at the same time. And I think they speak volumes about the community and especially that artistic voice that we're talking about, that especially the Coltrane one. That is where you hear that in a big way. It's great. Do you want the read and the TV as well, or just the music?
No, that's fine. No, we just great. Yeah, we've got time. We'll we can here. Sit here all no, day no, long you if you
will
want.
Be. No, you will be. Here.
No, that's amazing. I really appreciate
those two albums. Check them out.
Well, what we'll do is we'll drop all the links to everything you mentioned in the description.
Oh, great.
I think there's going to be a shitload on this episode.
I hope so.
Which is great. Again, thank you so much for coming in. Also, thank you to Alpha being in the room, and also to Ruby for making sure that this episode for once is recorded properly. I was going to say, let's hope I haven't spoken too soon.
Well, thank you very much for having us. It's been a treat, a pleasure.
Well, what a bloody pleasure that was. You'll find me at a jam session in a town near you soon. As always, you can find Will's recommendations in the description. Catch you next time, people.